for that state to exist. It is this idea, which you can buy into or not buy into as you want, but it is this very basic idea that this is the one Jewish state where we feel in order to exist and to be secure, we need this Jewish majority so that whatever happened, and it's not the Palestinian fault, but whatever happened in Europe 60 years ago isn't going to happen. And therefore, that in a sense, both sides have to make their big, big compromise. Yeah. Israel also has to make its big compromise. And on the Palestinian side, that big compromise has to do with the issue of refugee repatriation, because I do not see any Israeli government, forget the right wing, but the left wing governments, buying into a peace resolution which does not resolve the issue of the refugees in such a way that Israel will retain its one Jewish state.
So, Hossam, what's your response to this, to David's argument?
My response to this is that security can only come via satisfying people's aspirations and legitimate rights, and Israel can only survive in that region via that route. We've got two-thirds, as you rightly mentioned, of our people, and I do not accept the argument in any way or another that the solution of a people's plight has to come at the expense and the plight of other people. I do not accept that we should become the victims for some history that happened in Europe. I very much reiterate what Dawood just said, that even if the Jews of the Arab world were fled, it isn't the Palestinian problem. I invite Israelis, the Israeli society, to think of us not only as a demographic threat. We are also human beings who have our own aspirations. We have our own identity. And this is our home that you are living in right now. And the one that is behind it is our farm that my grandmother has used to farm. And therefore, we are talking about rather physical stuff. Perhaps when it comes to the implementation issue, one sits and talks about the best way to bring about such a right. But Israel has to start. The starting point is a full acknowledgement of its role when it comes to these almost 5 million refugees scattered within a bus ride from their homes.
Astrid, can I just go back briefly? The Palestinians, refugees who are being resettled in countries like Canada and Brazil, will they stay there? I mean, are they being given passports?
Well, they will get, they'll be able to have a life there, which will mean they will have identity papers, they will be able to get a job, they will be able to send their children to school, they will be able to learn the language. Mm. Now, the choice to stay there is, of course, up to them, and as we mentioned before, the ideal solution for everybody, every population, would be to return to their original home. Now, in the meantime, this solution has to be found, and we don't know how long it's going to last. Unfortunately, it's lasted very long. These people will have to have a life. So, yes, they will be able to stay, at least the ones that we have in Brazil at the moment. They are there, they're having a life, and they are,
the ones you've spoken
at least they
to.
Feel like they're living again.
The ones you speak to, do they say they want to go back to Palestine?
I think the ones that I've spoken to, I think everywhere in the world, the Palestinians will have their heart in Palestine. The many Palestinians I've spoken to, everybody knows a lot of them still have their keys or have their memories or have the keys that their parents had of the houses where they came from. So, yes, there will always be that. And I think for every refugee in the world, home is home. Everybody would like to return home, but maybe it will take many, many years to go there. I think that dream will always be there, but let at least make the time of waiting as light as possible. And of course, if they could stay as close to home, it would be the best. It really would be the best. But we're trying to make that suffering as little as possible while maybe one day they can return home.
I was in the Sabra and Shatila camp 2 years ago, and every child I spoke to said they wanted to go home to Palestine. But Palestine, for them, means present-day Israel, which is 78% of mandate Palestine. Would they go home? Would they really want to go? Would they recognize their homes in Israel proper?
I also visited Sabra and Shatila, and when you ask them, they don't say vaguely home. They will say, I'm from Acre, I'm from Kadaha, yani in this village and that village, and they know exactly where they came from, and this is the ingenuity of the Palestinian people. They were able to preserve not only a vague memory, but that identity,
Their costumes, the wonderful embroidery, all these things,
everything,
the music,
everything. Because when we speak about the right of return, we're not speaking about a collective right only. We're speaking also of an individual right. I read today in the Jewish Chronicle A gentleman in Britain, he wants compensation, the money from his parents. They lost it 60 years ago in Europe. And he's going to get it. He's going to get it. Whatever he wants, he lost in Europe 60 years ago. As an individual, he's going to get it. This is another individual here. He lost his home, his farm, and somebody's living in the house.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have the right.
David, is
I don't wish to take, I don't have the right to take memories and identities of someone else away. I have, you know, everyone has their own memories and identities. But I do think that, you know, we have to be very realistic here and say, do we want to resolve this conflict in such a way that both peoples can start living in security and build up their societies with human rights and dignity? And do we accept what each side is not prepared to accept from the other side because they feel it threatens their continued existence? Now, both of my colleagues here have mentioned something which says the acknowledgement of refugee return, the acknowledgement of compensation, and here you are opening the doors to all sorts of solutions to the refugee issue which could well be acceptable. Where Israel has a problem, or where, say, Israelis have a problem, is the idea that within their limited state itself, people are going to rebuild homes and threaten the Jewish majority.
But David, is it fair that any Jew in the world has a right to live in Israel, in great comfort, apparently, whereas no Palestinian who's many Palestinians I've known in Israel, Palestine, have been there probably for 2,000 years. They might even be the original Jews of the area anyway.
Yeah, well, I don't think 2,000 years, but certainly they
have. A long time.
There's no question, it's a long time. The issue of the Jewish right of return, I agree with you, for many people is problematic because it's asymmetrical, but it is the single Jewish homeland, and I think no one would deny the fact that Jews do have very strong historical and biblical roots there, and the ideal resolution today would be where two national entities, both of whom claim duration, both of whom claim historical rights, neither of whom are ever going to change their historical or philosophical perceptions on who is right and who is wrong, who is the greater victim and who is the lesser victim. We have to find the way in which those peoples can share those territories within two separate national entities.
Hussam, what do you think about the two-state solution in terms of the refugees?
The notion of security and that each nation should live secure should come from acceptance, not expansion. And our issues with Israel is not only with the refugee issue. You've mentioned the Oslo period, during which we were talking about peace and two-state solution.
Did you foresee a real independent Palestinian state in 1993?
At the beginning, everybody did foresee that. Because
on both sides.
On both sides. Mm. But from 1997 until 2000, September 2000, there was no one Israeli killed inside Israel. So the security point has to be put aside.
Until the visit to the Haram al-Sharif.
In that period, Israel opened diplomatic ties with countries all over the world that it has never dreamed of. Except its economy grew at a historical
rate. In Africa.
Everywhere. Mm-hmm. Its economy was growing 12% during that period. And guess what, Trevor? During that very period, Israeli colonies in the West Bank doubled. Mm. This isn't about security. This isn't about economic growth. This is about rejecting the idea of accepting the other.
Is this Ilan Pape's ethnic cleansing? Is that how you see it?
Well, Israel has a strategic approach to the whole issue of negotiations. Mm. And it is this. Maximum land with minimum people. It wants to have as much land as possible in the West Bank and, you know, inside Israel, deny them the villages and with less people. They couldn't care less if the people who left Gaza did not return.
In the long
term, there are those who argue, go to Jordan. Jordan is the alternative.
Sure, in the long term, this will be very counterproductive.
It is. Mm. It is because they speak of a two-state solution today, one that is disjointed, Jerusalem by itself, the West Bank for itself, Gaza for itself, and even within the West Bank, you know, you have enclaves. So what kind of state are we speaking about?
I think that argument today is a bit passe. I think that's changed considerably in the last 10 years. I think we all accept that the map that came out of the two Oslo agreements was a totally unworkable map because, as you say, there were enclaves and exclaves and bypass roads, and that's not how you create a political solution.
A, B, and C.
That you don't create a political solution that way. Now, of course, at the time, they spoke about a be a transition period, which of course never came about.
Why not?
But I do think that when you are sort of entering into negotiations to draw a new border, whether that border is the Green Line or it's somewhere else, then it's very clear that both sides of that line have to have compact, have to have contiguous territories. Israeli settlements on the other side of that line, wherever that line is, cannot continue to exist.
Well, I could argue that this has already failed, this two-state solution has already failed.
It has, and the thing is, the approach is, there are preconditions. The Palestinians must accept the new realities on the ground. They must accept the settlements. They must accept the wall. The wall, which started as a security mechanism.
And the wall absorbs 30% of the West Bank.
It has now become a de facto border. So, in the end, they're going to be left with something like 10% of the West Bank for their state, or 10% of historic Palestine, and we say this is a just solution.
So what is the solution? One state solution?
This isn't about the form of the solution. It isn't about the failure of the two state. The problem with we are about to witness a change within the Israeli society.
We are about
Israeli, if the Israeli psyche remains to be assessed that want an absolute majority in Israel, we will block any Palestinian. We will treat our Israeli citizens of Palestinian regions in a very discriminatory manner. We will. Two-state solution will not work. One-state solution will not work.
The 1 million Palestinians in Israel don't have a right to land, really.
1.25 million. They do have some right to land. They do have some good rights in terms of voting in the Knesset. We acknowledge all the above, but they are second-class citizens. There are institutional racism against them, such as they are not allowed to marry if his wife or her husband comes from the West Bank. This is an absolute fascism if it's if it was done in Europe, such an absurd way of looking at the human being only as a source of demographic threat. And that's exactly what brings me back to my very original idea. This isn't about the form of the solution. This is about a recognition. You must be accepted in a region that is predominantly Arabs and Muslims. And the path, the gate for that is by accepting others' aspirations.
But that would be a one-state solution.
I think that the situation of the 1 million Palestinian citizens of Israel, I agree, is a very weak situation. They are looked on suspiciously by both Israeli society and Palestinian society. And in other words, rather than being able to be the bridge between the two societies, both of them view them suspiciously. And while I would be naive to say they have 100% equality within Israel, given the context of the conflict, given the context where Israelis do view them, maybe wrongly, in suspicious terms, then I think the fact that they do have the political rights, you can have Palestinian members of the Israeli Knesset getting up in the Israeli parliament and more or less saying, we don't believe that the Jewish state of Israel has the right to exist, it's not legitimate, I think that is quite remarkable given the context of the conflict which exists.
I wish to disagree with this, because I think if we look at the most recent official discourse, Foreign Minister Livni, before Annapolis, she said, if there is going to be a state in the West Bank, it has to solve the problem of Palestinians in Israel. So this caused a great uproar across the region.
He genuinely means that 1 million would have to move to the West Bank.
They are speaking about a population swap.
But they have passports.
They're not even speaking about a land swap only. They're talking about a population swap.
Yes.
This is,
it's absurd. You know, Trevor, you live in this country 5 years, only living, and then the British government would come and give you indefinite leave to remain. 1 year later, it gives you the nationality. You are a citizen, and you are treated as the prime minister or the queen, for that matter. You're equal. This is absurd. We are now in the globalized age, and we are now about citizenship and the definition of citizenship. I come from that part of the world. I was born in that part of the world. I lived most of my life in that part of the world, and believe you me, I cannot go back right now. Some of the Israeli argument, the Jewish argument, which I always encounter, that my father also had to flee Poland, and somebody else came and lived in his or her place. And my answer always is that, does your father, does he have the right to go back to Poland now? And of course, yes, he can go back to Poland, or he can live there, he can reclaim his nationality. So the issue, we have to go beyond who did what. Now, we want to look for the best solution. And the best solution, I believe, is that we must scratch all these borders. I as a person do not want to see myself as a threat to any state. And I think if I want to stay in England, I would be having the English citizenship or anywhere else.
Here we agree totally. We have to find an acceptable solution today. I'm a scholar of borders. I work on borders. And, you know, we often argue that we live in a borderless world where, you know, the borders separating physical territories are to a certain extent extent passé. Now, in certain parts of the world, in Western Europe, that's great. You know, people now live in peace, they live in stability with each other, they don't fear each other, and they don't feel that the other constitutes a threat. Maybe 20, 30 years after an Israeli-Palestinian peace agreement, we can do that. But in the first instances, both peoples need to have their separate, independent areas where they feel secure, where they feel equal, and whether they can, where then in the future they can negotiate about removing borders.
A last comment.
I agree that both people do need that. I agree that Palestinians need to go through the inevitable stage of nationhood and statehood. We need our own independent state for the matter, but that should not, in any way or another, come at the expense of the very just cause of the refugees.
I want to thank all our guests for this discussion on the issue of the Palestinian refugees. This is a vital issue to which we will certainly be returning in the coming months. I am Trevor Mostyn, this is Press TV, and if you, the viewers, have any questions or comments about this edition of MET or any other of our previous editions, please email us at met@presstv.co.uk. Once again, it's met@presstv.co.uk. Thanks for joining us, and see you again next week on Middle East Today at Press TV.
It's either obey it or go and do what I've done. So you really don't have a choice. I mean, there's a lot of people in the military who has family, kids they have to support. And so it's not an easy choice, but in the military, they train you to follow orders.
And what happened that you ended up going to the army?
Basically no economy, and that's the only choice I had.
When I joined, I was only 17, and I didn't know about it. I knew about Iraq. I didn't know how bad it was.
And to me, that's what caused total chaos, because people were dying for no reason, you know, except for standing.
I don't want to be sent.